Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Room & Board. For years, I've gotten their catalog, I drool over their couches, their beds, and their furniture, and now they just started making new stuff for your bathroom, like vanities, mirrors, storage, even cute little toilet paper holders. You can check it all out at roomandboard.com/YHL. That's roomandboard.com/YHL.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing a shameless technique I used to score some awesome secondhand furniture. Plus, we reveal why one of our collaborations with a home builder never saw the light of day, and we dig into your thoughts on buying a house that's too big. Guys, I broke the shopping ban with a bang.
Well, you didn't break it. It was over.
That's right. I broke out of the shopping ban shell like a chrysalis. Maybe a butterfly emerging from my, what's that?
Chrysalis?
There it is. There's the word. And I looked around and I thought, what would be a meaningful first purchase? And I got the baskets, like I told you, which is very boring. But now I have an exciting purchase I made that I do not regret. No regrets, guys.
You're not supposed to regret them. Now the ban is over, Sherry.
I know. I just felt like, well, maybe after the ban, it would have some residual effects and I'd buy like hardly anything. But I'm looking at it as I went a month without buying anything, and I'm certainly not going to buy 2 months worth of stuff this month. At least that is certainly not what I'm trending towards. But I have been making some purchases, and they're ones I'm really, really excited about because I think I have to really be excited about something to buy it now.
That's the lasting effect of the ban.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. And you know what I did, guys? I returned to my old friend, Facebook Marketplace, where I love to find secondhand stuff because, you know, we all love Target, we all love Home Goods, but I don't want my whole house full of that stuff. And I love finding really old, cool things. Our daughter's bed is 100 years old, for example. I found a really cool marble top dresser that lives in the foyer at the beach house, and it just like makes that whole space. And, you know, my favorite find of all time secondhand came from Facebook Marketplace, and it was that inlay dresser. It's like a gray and white, beautifully designed, very intricate inlay pattern. And it retails for like maybe $1,900. I forget. It's from Restoration Hardware.
Yeah, so it's expensive is the point.
It was expensive for the person who bought it, but I got it cheap on Craigslist. And I waited for her to come down and kind of stalked it. And it was my like pride and joy.
Well, not Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, right?
Sorry, yeah. Same. Yeah. They're all the same thing in my head. I just call them all Craigslist.
Yeah, Craigslist is like the Kleenex.
Exactly.
You know, like the generic term for like a facial tissue.
Exactly. I like how you broke that down for people.
Right.
Like,
just anyone, so you understand.
Does anyone use the term facial tissue? I don't think so.
No, because people use toilet paper.
That's true. But have you ever in your life said, will you hand me some facial tissue?
No, I don't.
Okay, let me get back to my chairs. You'll have to go to the show notes because no matter how many words I use.
You haven't even mentioned what the chairs are.
I know, but I'm saying you can't describe these chairs adequately without a picture. So go to the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. You can see the chairs. They are metal, vintage, large, amazing chairs. And they're outdoor chairs. They're like patio furniture. And the way that I got them is pretty unusual, I think, because it was an ad for a large piece of driftwood. And so I'm on Facebook Marketplace. I see these chairs in the background with this big hunk of wood in the foreground.
I'm curious as to why you even clicked on the driftwood ad in the first place.
Even in the little thumbnail, I could see these white chairs. And I was like, oh, I'm looking for patio furniture. Because that's the other residual thing from the shopping ban, guys. I'm not shopping or browsing things I don't need. So I now have a running tally in my head. I don't need more dressers. I have found two amazing dressers on Craigslist. Well, Facebook Marketplace. I might never find amazing dressers again until I need them for the duplex, but I'm not hunting for them anymore.
Right.
So even if I see a little thumbnail and I think it's cute, I'm not opening it to torture myself because I know I don't have a use for it or a need for it. But when I saw these little outdoor chairs in the thumbnail, I could tell they were metal. I could tell they were placed outside. I didn't know why the heck there was a hunk of wood in front of them, but I was willing to click the picture to find out. And I didn't want the driftwood, but I DM'd the seller and I said, hey, about those chairs in the background, they wouldn't happen to be for sale now, would they? And she was like, oh yes, they're these very cool vintage chairs. They just came out of a really fancy beach house in Virginia Beach. So the irony of that is I need these for the patio we're doing at the Pink House, which is maybe half an hour from Virginia Beach. So hearing they came from a fancy beach house near the area where we're doing a beach house, I was immediately hooked. I was like, oh, fancy.
Sherry was basically looking for any justification she could find that she should buy these.
I mean, I was looking for a sign from the universe. And when the woman said, they are for sale. In fact, I'll give you this amazing price and I will drive them to your house because they're too big to fit in your car. Because that was another sort of stumbling block for me. I knew I couldn't get both both of them in the back of our car. They're huge. When you see them in the show notes, you'll understand. They're like an armchair made of metal. So the woman said, I will drive them to you. And I was like, how can I say no?
So what you're saying is the universe was sending you lots of signs, I guess.
Oh, a million signs.
And I will say, they were very cool.
Very cool. And they're
ours. They are. I'm looking at them right now through the window because, like Sherry said, we intend them to go on the patio at the beach house. But right now, said patio is just a pile of dirt and weeds.
Oh, it has some flags because we've marked it off. Like, it's about to get started. We just have to finish one more thing at the duplex. John's not a believer.
I was going to say, about to get started is a bit of a stretch because the one more thing is we have to put roofing and siding on the duplex. So
right. It's a big project, but they do it pretty fast.
It's a generous to say it's about to get started. But it is planned, the patio, so we know where it's going to go, so we can start to envision it in our mind's eye. That's why we are starting to look for furniture for it.
Right. And the funny thing is I was looking at all the obvious places, you know, like World Market and Pottery Barn and CB2 and like all the Target, the ones that have all the outdoor furniture. Because guys, the time is now to buy outdoor furniture. Yeah. If you wait till summer, it's often gone. Like they've moved on to other seasons. And so I try to stay ahead. And I was looking at all those, but outdoor furniture is so expensive, especially big, solid pieces, especially metal pieces that aren't going to rot.
Well, and the nice thing about metal is because it's not going to have issues of like wood cracking or, you know, fabric that gets stained. Like there's going to be less maintenance for these guys because they're pretty much ready to go as we got them. I mean, we probably will spray paint them because the color's kind of like a oatmeal-y white.
Yeah, they're like a taupe white and I would probably like a crisper white, especially because the beach house has bright white trim. But the cool thing about them is that once I spray paint them, I picture them not being much maintenance at all. Maybe we power wash them like once a season. But I just, words cannot describe the amazingness of these chairs. In fact, I was so excited about these chairs. I knew my one chair soulmate, Jenny Commenda of Little Green Notebook. Do you guys know Jenny?
I'm not your chair soulmate.
I mean, you're my life soulmate, but she's my chair soulmate.
Okay.
And so I took the pictures of the chairs. I was so excited. And I just DM'd her on Instagram. And I said, you will not believe the chairs I just got on Facebook Marketplace. And she sent me back like 30 of the skull emojis. And she just said, I'm dead from those chairs. I even ran to John and I said, she gave me exactly what I needed. She gave me the dead face.
Yes. She validated your feelings.
You know what's funny? They're like a cousin of the egg chair, don't you think?
I mean, they do kind of have like a bucket type seat.
Yeah, they like envelop you when you sit in a way or cradle you in the same way that an egg would.
Okay, I'll give you that a little bit. You'll just have to see the picture in the show notes. So we'll put it there, younghouselove.com/podcast. Again, that's not their final placement you'll see them in, but you'll get the idea of the chairs. But the other thing we wanted to talk to you about that's been new with us is we recently had a game night at our house. And not only was it an affirmation of how fun it is to host those sort of things, it also was a reminder to Sherry and I that it's pretty easy to pull off. I think we talk ourselves out of it so often. Like, we know in the logical part of our brains that game nights are fun. We should have more people over to our house. Like, we actually do enjoy entertaining when the time comes. But before one of those things, when we're thinking about it, we talk ourselves out of actually planning one because it feels like it's going to be all this work or it's going to be expensive. Or like Sherry and I, who are not the most adept people in the kitchen.
Right.
Like, we're going to fall flat in terms of the hors d'oeuvre menu or
right,
whatever.
Like, will people not like the snacks?
Right, exactly. Oh gosh, would they talk about us afterwards and how pitiful the snacks were? Anyways, what we did for this last game night was, as I said, a reminder that it's actually really easy. And at the end of the day, people don't really care that much about the snacks. I mean, if you are a big like chef person and you like to do that part of it, I'm sure people enjoy it. But Sherry and I went to the grocery store like 2 hours before, bought some chips and nuts and cookies, and like everything was store-bought. We did not make a single thing.
And nothing was hot and nothing took utensils. At the end of the night, there's cleanup because there's the bowls that things were served in, but there's not cleanup because everyone had a plate and a fork and a knife and the sink isn't full.
Right, exactly. We don't have like pots and pans everywhere from baking or whatever. And also we just do sort of like a BYOB thing. Like, people know that we don't have much to offer in that department. So we're like, if you want to drink something fun, bring it.
Right. And I get like one fun novelty beverage, but people can mix with it. So
Fresca is not a novelty beverage, Sherry.
I mean, we took pictures with it. I feel like that qualifies.
No. I mean, the point is that it's just fun to be in the company of your friends who, as adults, it's sometimes hard to find time to get everyone together as a group. We often try to like punt the hosting because, again, we're kind of nervous about all the logistics of it. But we realize that hosting it actually is a nice bonus because you don't have to get a babysitter.
Right. Kids can go to bed. We have them at 7:30. Both of our kids can be sleeping by then. And we set everything up like while we're tucking them in. And when people are arriving, we kiss them. We close the door. We come downstairs and we have a game night.
Yeah.
And one of the other things I like about it is that when everyone leaves at like 10:30 or 11 and they're driving home, we're already home.
Yeah, we don't need a designated driver because we're not drunk and we live here.
And we live here. No, but the other thing that's nice about that is we can spend like 10 minutes cleaning the bowls or whatever and putting some snacks in Ziploc bags that didn't get eaten. And then we can like sit on the couch and watch a show instead of spending the time driving home and like paying the babysitter and doing all the things that everyone else is doing. So I'm here to advocate for hosting the game night because also I think people think it's expensive. But when you think about paying the babysitter, we might actually be getting the better end of the bargain. We went into the grocery store and spent maybe $20 on snacks and stuff, but it certainly wasn't what we'd pay a babysitter for like 3 or 4 hours being gone.
Well, and so Sherry and I have actually already reached out to another group of friends who schedule another game night because we have to take advantage of being on this high before that like voice creeps back in and starts to talk us out of it again. Like, let's strike while the iron is hot on the game night. And I will suggest, if you guys are looking for game recommendations, that we kind of were through our usual repertoire last night. Like, we played some of our popular games with this group already. So before people got there, we real quick looked up our friends Chris and Julia's post that they did recently on hosting a game night because they had a nice rundown of games that they played. And so we plucked one off that list that I had played in college, but no one else had ever played before, called Mafia.
Well, it's also called Werewolf, I've heard. So yes. If you don't know what Mafia is, but you know what Werewolf, same thing.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the rules quite specifically, so we had to Google it. But the gist of it is there's no game board or like a formal thing that you buy. You can just play with any deck of cards. And people in the group get designated as Mafia members, and it's a secret. No one knows who they are. And night falls on the town. That means everyone closes their eyes. It feels very elementary school for a little while.
We're like, is this thumbs up?
Yeah, I got some people who were skeptical of this game as I first introduced it.
Well, we all thought it was going to suck. And then by like the second round, we were like, we are so into this. Because there's not a board. There's not all these pieces and parts. Like, it's very rudimentary. You pull a card to figure out if you're Mafia or not. And that's the extent of anything that you have to touch for the whole game.
Yeah, you don't need any other materials. But once night falls and people's eyes are closed, the person who is sort of moderating the game, there's one moderator, they tell the Mafia members just to open their eyes so that the Mafia knows who's in the Mafia with them. And one night at a time, they get to pick off the townspeople, identify who gets to be killed by the Mafia. And the rules that I read online say that if you don't like the whole organized crime angle, you can play Werewolf, where people are werewolves. So at night, they turn into
werewolves.
Yes.
And they hunt someone in the town.
Exactly.
Same thing. It's like the townspeople don't know who the Mafia is. The Mafia knows who the Mafia is, but there's only two of them. And there's a much bigger group. We had 8 people over. So there were many more townspeople than Mafia. And I'd say it was 50-50. Like half the time the townspeople outlived the Mafia because the townspeople have a chance to guess who is Mafia and kill them off.
Yeah. Once the sun rises, meaning everyone opens their eyes again, then the townspeople get to debate and try to figure out who the plants are, like who the Mafia is or who the werewolves are. Again, it's probably more complicated than I can explain here, but we got the hang of it within a couple rounds, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the longer rules if you want to see them.
I just think getting your friends together in your home, I mean, that's the whole reason. Like, why would we have this home and fill it with things we love and not fill it with people we love?
Heck, we used the dining room.
I know we did. We used one of the rooms we said we never used.
Maybe we should start calling it the game night room.
I mean, it's what it's used for at this point.
And real quick, before we move on to the next thing, I have, I guess, kind of a news announcement. I felt like I had a sound effect for this at one point, but I couldn't find it. So... Ding-dong. Perfect.
I like how your ding-dong layered under my loud dun dun.
It's a complex track we just put together there. Anyways, a quick news announcement. A lot of you guys have asked over the last couple years for some information on podcasting. Like, actually, if you were to make your own podcast or record your own show, how would you go about doing it? And Sherry and I have kind of hemmed and hawed about the best way to communicate the information because there's a lot of it. Like, it is not as hard as it sounds, but there are a lot of details beyond just like how to press record on something. Like, how do you actually figure out what your show is going to be about, preparing them to actually launch and uploading, all that stuff.
Right. Like the minutiae of making cover art and how to get it on iTunes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Music, where we get music for segments.
Yeah. And so we kept coming back to the fact that this felt like more than we could squeeze into a blog post or even a group of blog posts. Like, we do have a series of blog posts about starting a blog that fit nicely in there. We can link to that if anyone's interested in that. But anyways, the thing I'm getting to is we got an invitation from Elsie and Emma at A Beautiful Mess, if you guys are familiar with them. We've had Elsie on the podcast before. We got an invitation to make an e-course with them about podcasting. And we figured this is actually the best way to do it because rather than cram all this information into a series of blog posts, now we can do this super robust course with them. And this was the fun part for me, especially, is we got to co-teach it, if that's the correct verb for it, co-write it, co-create it, I don't know, with Jeremy Larson. That's Elsie's husband, who is a professional musician. So he knows some ins and outs of audio recording that is much more technical than I know.
Yeah, it was fun for John because he's like, I'm nerding out in this section's by Jeremy. I'm learning so much.
The teacher becomes the student. So we worked with him and also the team at A Beautiful Mess to put together this course. It's 13 lessons. It will take you from like just having the idea that you want to look into podcasting maybe to having your podcast recorded and out in the world where you can promote it for everyone to listen. Jeremy even gets into how you can create your own original music.
Yeah, it's exhaustive. And we talk about things like sponsorships, which I know people have questions about. So if you're looking for technical things, you know, whether it's sound or recording or just like conceptual things like what to say or how to keep coming up with topics, because you do have to have things to talk about every single week if you're doing a weekly podcast, that's in there. And then we also included like how we approach sponsorships, how we manage that stuff.
Yes.
But anyway, go to the show notes. We'll put the links there to the e-course itself, and we'll also put the discount code YHL15 so you can remember to apply that at checkout.
Yeah. So if you have been one of those people who've asked us about podcasting, here is our answer.
Here it is.
There's also a Q&A message board as part of it. So if you have further questions after reading, we'll be dropping in there to answer questions along the way. So it's more than just like getting these, you know, few lessons.
And John will be asking Jeremy all the questions.
Right. I'll be like, I'm going to hand that over to Jeremy. Take it away, Jer. I don't know if he likes me calling him Jer. I feel like I'm cheating on him with Jeremy Bauer.
You and all your Jeremys.
Yeah. Jeremy Bauer, you're still my first. So with that out of the way, let's revisit a conversation we had a few episodes ago, because it was a big one and I feel like we didn't cram everything in there. Plus, we got a lot of great feedback from you guys after it aired. What I'm talking about is in episode 95, where we admitted that we feel like our house is too big. And to recap real quickly, we were saying that not because we're planning to move, but it just felt good to acknowledge that bigger is better dream that a lot of us subscribe to in real estate is not always true. At least for us, we realize like climbing that property ladder to get the biggest house that you can buy is maybe not the right answer for every family. And we feel like maybe we overshot it a little bit.
Right. And if someone's out there house hunting, it was just us saying like, hey, take a beat before there's two you love and one has like a great location or a great lofted ceiling, but it's smaller. Don't always discount that one and say bigger is better, because there are other selling features that might actually be better for your family.
Yeah, I think we just wanted to put it out there. So for people who are house hunting or building a house, or if you're someone who lives in a house and dreams of maybe having a bigger house or like getting to that larger dream house, we hope maybe it was a reminder that like the grass isn't always greener. And we did put some polls in the show notes to sort of like actually take some numbers on this. I was actually happy to see that about half the people thought that their house was a perfect size. I think 47% of people said like, I wouldn't change the size of my house. So that I think is great news.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We only had 17% of people who thought their house was too big and they wish it were smaller. So at least we're not alone.
But for many years, we wouldn't have said that. I think we would have said it was perfect, because it's all about sort of your experiences that lead you to believe that a certain house size is great for you, you know? Which is also very personal. But then something can happen. Like, we subscribe now to having less stuff being easier. It's less to maintain. It's less to pay for. And so we are simplifying and paring back in almost every way possible. We're trying to have less of lots of things. And so I think subscribing to that belief now makes it much easier for us to see that too much house is also a lot of things to deal with.
Yeah.
And so not only do I want fewer things in each room, I actually want fewer rooms to deal with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think 2 years ago, if I took that poll, I would have said my house is the perfect size.
Yeah. We're just on this kind of simplicity kick where we realize making things simpler makes life easier. So like we're heading towards that direction right now. I think for me, the two really interesting debates, or not necessarily debates, but things that came up in the comments when we published this episode was, one, you know, we had said that maybe we will change our tune when our kids get older. Like when they're bigger, when they're teenagers, like maybe we will love having that extra bonus room up there where they can go and do teenage stuff without us being in the way.
Yeah, that was a constant refrain. It was like, wait till your kids get older.
Yeah.
Boy, are you going to love all that space.
Yeah, there were lots of people who were like, yes to that, because I have teenagers, and like, I think someone put it as like, imagine 10 teenage Johns eating hot dogs in your kitchen. Like, you will appreciate having a large kitchen.
Right. They were just pointing out that like kids have their friends over and you'll love having a space to keep them under your roof and not going out somewhere or not being near you. And so you'll really appreciate the extra square footage. But then.
Yes, this was the interesting thing to me.
There was a completely dissenting group. And their thoughts were like, that was not my experience. When my kids grew older, they had fewer of those big toys, so I had less to store and I needed less space. And also, they retreated to their room and were so quiet, I didn't even know they were home half
right.
the time.
Or they spent a lot more time out of the house because they might have their own car or they had a job. And so you needed less space in the teenage years. And I think some people also said it's nice to have the smaller house when they're teenagers because it kind of forces some closeness in the family, since that's kind of the age where stereotypically children start to kind of like be off on their own and sort
right,
of
like
isolate themselves a bit.
Yeah.
So this small house might help you counteract that.
Right. Or like just keep tabs on them more easily than being like, I don't know what they're doing. They're on the other wing of the house.
Right, exactly. So I thought the two sides of this obviously both have a lot of valid points, and it probably just depends on your family and your kids.
Right.
So I'm really curious to see what our experience is. Not that I'm trying to fast forward to the teenage years, because sometimes I already feel like we have teenagers living in our house.
Well, I would also say, and maybe everyone's going to argue about this, I don't know, I don't have teenagers, so this is just a guess, but my guess would be that your house might create the type of teenager you have. So if you have a lot of space, your kids will fill it up, and they will have a lot of stuff, and they will have a lot of friends.
Well, or you might become the entertaining house.
Right. And I think if you have a little space, they might not have a lot of stuff because there isn't room to have a lot of stuff. So you might create whatever ends up happening by giving them the environment to facilitate that.
It's like the difference between putting a solid in a box versus a gas in a box, because a gas will fill the space.
This got very science-y all of a sudden.
Our daughter just had a states of matter unit in class, so this is fresh in my head. And I think the other really interesting debate, because I said there were two, was that people were saying it's not necessarily about how much space you have, but the efficiency of that space. Because sometimes you have these big houses that have lots of square footage, but the layout doesn't necessarily make it conducive to take advantage of all of that square footage.
Right. And we heard from people who said, like, I've literally had two houses that were the same square footage. Let's say they both were 1,500 square feet. But one of them was so choppy and so stupidly laid out that it felt so small and cramped and horrible. And then one was really open and really well planned. And I felt like I had a place for everything. And it was such great flow. And then that, even though it was the same exact square footage, the layout was what made that house amazing.
Right, because you might have a lot of square footage, but it's in a basement, or it's in a lot of hallways, or the closets are big or something. And if that's not what you need, like if you're not a family that needs big closets, then maybe that's not useful square footage for you. And so I thought that was a really interesting thing to think about, mostly for people who are maybe remodeling, or if you're building a new house, or if you're shopping for a new house, is that not necessarily to zero in on that square footage number, but really, really pay attention to where that square footage goes to make sure that it's valuable. Sherry and I were also thinking a lot about this because around the same time we were doing that episode, we were working on that Homerama house with the three kids rooms for charity. And those houses are always super big and super grand. You know, they're supposed to be show houses. So they're a place for the builder and the designers to show off how much they can do. So they are always pushing them to be grand. Like, I don't remember exact square footages, but I believe they were all like 5,000 or so square 6,000 feet. You know, even the one we worked on back in 2014 was a fairly large house, like larger than we would need.
I think it was 3,800.
I don't really remember. But the point is, going through those, yes, it's fun as like an outside observer to step into that fantasy of like a really, really big house. But Sherry and I walked in this time thinking much more specifically about like, is this functional or helpful square footage? Like, there was one house I was thinking of that had a nice grand formal living room, and right above it had a lofted like casual living room. And then they also had a basement with another casual living space, and then two outdoor seating areas for more gathering. And so I was thinking to myself, like, these are all nice spaces, but do you really need five gathering spots? I mean, maybe you entertain a lot. Maybe you host huge game nights and you do need all five.
Yeah, you could totally use them if it makes sense to your lifestyle. But like, if you were empty nesters and your family didn't come visit you, it probably isn't the house for you. Yeah. But I think that they get purchased by people who at least intend to use them, hopefully.
Well, and I could see how even us, we were wowed in that moment. Like, this Homerama show really is a showcase for these builders, so people will hire them to build their house. So I understand how those work as, I guess, sales tools, you could say, like, because you paint this picture of how amazing it would be to live here, like the couch that seats 12.
Right. There was actually a couch. Can you guys picture one couch smashed into another couch, like Lego couches that you connect? And so it's two full couches, but they've been joined in the middle.
Yeah.
That was in the informal living space upstairs. And my total first reaction was like, I'm going to roll all over that couch in my fantasy. I'm going to like burrow. I'm going to go from one end to the other. I'm going to splay out. I'm going to sleep there. I'm going to watch TV all day.
Yeah. But then in the back of your mind is like, this is a lot of furniture in here. Like, this is an expensive room to decorate.
Well, yeah, it was a custom couch that was giant. And it was gorgeous, but like, it would feel kind of stupid if you and your husband and your like one child sat on it every night. You'd be like, why did I need this big double couch?
Yeah, you have to make a phone call call from one end to the other.
Exactly.
Well, and the other thing I was thinking about is, and I don't think we've shared this before, is one sort of side project we worked on years ago was with one of these builders that we met through Homerama, where they were looking to develop some smaller homes. They had done all these big floor plans in these big grand neighborhoods, but they were trying to get into a neighborhood that needed smaller footprints, and he wanted to sort of like appeal to a buyer with maybe a smaller budget looking for a smaller house. And so like we jumped right on that opportunity because we like efficient floor plans.
Right. Like we're not the people who are like, oh, but I need to add a wine cellar. We'll just tack on 400 more extra square feet. Like we try to rethink things and move walls. And, you know, with these two beach houses we've worked on, like we're really kind of focused on using what we have. And we don't often jump to like, let's just make another floor.
Right. Well, that's something we learned through the process is he said it was a struggle sometimes working with his usual folks because their solution to floor plan issues, like there's not a good place for a mudroom, was, okay, we'll just tack on an addition that has that additional square footage.
A bump out. You guys know that term?
Right.
Bump out. There are so many bump outs in new constructions. And he was saying to us, well, that's not a mistake. Like that's because designers are adding more features and they just bump them out.
Right. Well, and it works to everyone's favor for the most part because the home buyer gets more space and they get to buy a house that is larger and has that larger square footage number. And the builder gets to sell a larger house. So like they get to make a slightly larger margin off of making a bigger house. Like if they throw in a basement, you know, they could add 2,000 square feet and charge for 2,000 square feet. But as you, the buyer, maybe you don't actually need a basement.
Right. That's the thing to think about is that at the time when we were designing these smaller houses, the project kind of fizzled, you guys. It was sad for us because we were creating these cool floor plans, but he was saying everyone I approached with them was like, we'll just take the bigger one because everyone was so focused on cost per square footage. If you guys know that term, it's like when you're buying a house, you might compare one big one and the price per square foot might be 120. And you might look at a littler one and the price per square foot might be 130. And that does mean each square foot is a little bit pricier. But if the littler house is better for you and in a great location and wonderfully designed and just makes you feel like it's so efficient and it's less to maintain and less to care for, like there is value beyond cost per square foot.
Right. But he said a lot of buyers will look at that number. And so the larger house wins in that metric.
It seems like a value or a bargain. And it goes back to that conversation we had. If there's two houses, one's big and one's small, and the big one is cheaper, you think that's the better value, bar none.
Yeah.
And you don't really think beyond that.
Yeah.
But the good reminder we heard from you guys was like, just because you get a big house for a deal doesn't mean it's then free. Like you have to heat and cool it. If the roof goes, you have to re-roof a larger roof, which is more expensive. If you have siding rot, you might have more siding to redo. Like
right.
There's a lot more to maintain when there's a lot more that you purchase.
Right. And so it was sad to us that like none of these floor plans that we came up with were ever built because he couldn't find buyers for them because they always wanted to go to the larger house and buy the bigger thing. Because I think everyone, especially in the area that he was building, just they came there because they wanted more. It was out in the suburbs. Like you were moving to the suburbs because you wanted the big house.
Right. But I like to think this was a few years ago and I like to think that the tide's already turning. And I think in like 5 or 10 years, I like to imagine that these floor plans will see the light
they're
of day
come
eventually.
They're crawling back.
You know, I think it was Matt Paxton that said we're the last generation buying these huge houses.
Mm-hmm.
And the trend for millennials is going back to smaller homes because they're more mindful about energy efficiency and they're more mindful about how much they want to maintain and how much of their weekend they want to spend cleaning it and working on it. And so I think it would be really interesting to just, you know, wait 5 or 10 years and see if that comes to fruition.
So long story short, we really enjoyed the conversation that happened after that episode. That's why we wanted to revisit and talk about it a bit more.
It had the most comments we've ever gotten on Instagram in the history of Instagram.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I think 600 comments on an Instagram post just talking about a podcast, which usually the Instagram posts about a podcast get the fewest amount of comments. So it was amazing to hear from so many people and so many people replying to each other and saying, like, oh, really? Tell me more about that.
So in the show notes, I'll put a link to that Instagram post. So if you guys want to go back and read some of that, because obviously we just sort of touched on the surface of what was talked about there. And again, I want to say to close the discussion is that this is not in any way to pass judgment on people who have a giant house or a small house. We know that people just buy what works for for them or what they can afford, what makes sense for their family at that time. We just enjoyed having the conversation about it and we wanted to keep it up. So I guess when we post about this podcast episode, maybe there will be more conversation in the comments. See if we can top that 600.
I don't think we ever will.
Come on, guys, we can do it. This is my shameless plug for comments.
He's begging you guys. Make the man
happy. I'm not begging quite yet. We'll get to that later in the episode, maybe.
Okay, but up next, we have our digging. I'm actually digging something else I bought after the shopping ban. But first, we have to take a quick break.
If you guys have listened to this podcast for a while, you know that we talk a lot about someday renovating our master bathroom, but have made absolutely zero progress towards actually doing it.
I know. I feel like we've been so distracted by beach house stuff, and we reached a point where now we're like, the beach house bathrooms are better than our bathrooms.
Well, I also think you kind of just enjoy the actual like daydreaming part of it.
I always think about like, what would I do? What kind of vanity? What kind of tub? Do I want a shower and a tub? And this week's sponsor, Room and Board, is giving me so much new stuff to think about because they're actually creating these vanities that you can customize, and they're so good.
Yeah, I was impressed with how much they looked like furniture, like a nice wood dresser or buffet, but they're for your bathroom.
Right, and you can choose from different options for length, the wood tone, the metal finish, even the sink top, the little knobs on it. Like, I had so much fun because it feels like choose your own adventure.
And it's not just vanities that they've added. They also have storage hooks, toilet paper holders, mirrors, even bathroom rugs, some of which you can order to the specific length you want. Like, I want it this many inches long and this many inches wide.
And that's so helpful because at the beach house, it would be an awkward dimension. So this is very good to know.
Yeah, bathrooms are kind of weird like that. So you can check out all of their bathroom stuff at roomandboard.com/YHL. Again, I don't have a discount code for you because Room and Board doesn't do them. They don't do any coupons or sales throughout the year because they want you to be able to take your time to make the perfect decision for your house.
Right. So it's all at roomandboard.com/YHL. Guys, I bought some clothes and not all of them were black. That's right, the self-proclaimed owner of like 5 items of clothing throughout the shopping ban actually became acutely aware of the things I owned. And I mean that to say that it was positive and negative. It was good when I was appreciating my eyebrow pencil. And I was like, I like this eyebrow pencil. I don't need to buy any new cosmetics because I'm pleased with what I own. It also kind of shone a light on things that were busted up. And since I could not replace them because that was the rules, I kind of had some shame creeping in like, wow, I can't believe I have these shorts that I had since before I had my daughter who's 8 and the zipper doesn't stay up. Like, who am I? Can't I just get new shorts?
You are a lady who walks around with her fly down, it sounds like.
I wear long shorts, guys, to cover it up. So, after the shopping ban was lifted, I felt like it was a good time to actually purchase some new clothes because I was going into it not on a bender of like, I want to buy all the things because I'm still very much in that mindset of I'm not buying stuff I don't need. I'm paring down, not adding on. But there were some old rickety things in my closet that needed to go. So I went to Old Navy. I love Old Navy. I know it's not fancy. I know a lot of people go to fancier places.
Some people upgrade to Gap.
I know some people are a banana shoppers.
Oh, ooh, please, la, la. Come on. They're the ones in the big houses.
But I went to Old Navy and they have some really good stuff right now. So I'm just going to share it with you. If you go to the show notes, you can see exactly what I'm talking about because I might make a little mood board of things I actually purchased and wear. I am short and moderately petite. So I feel like these are clothes that would work on someone else that has a similar body type. I'm 5'2", I'm like 125, and I have a very small head, so certain shirts make my head look like a pinhead. So if you have this problem, hopefully these clothes will help. But I got an assortment of like shorts because I needed new shorts. So I got some denim shorts. And then I got these shorts that were not black, you guys. They're navy and they're like almost a pajama short.
They're black adjacent.
They're black adjacent. They're navy with a black tie, which I like that the tie is black because I pair them with a black shirt. Not a black tie, your picture.
I bought these black tie shorts for all my formal short events.
Like a draw. String. There's a black drawstring.
I know what you mean. It just sounded funny.
So listen, I pair it with my black V-neck because that's what I wear, let's be honest. And they're like a pajama short. And I actually wore them to game night with a pair of cute shoes. You know, you have to kind of dress them up or dress them down. Like they work with a flip-flop because they're like pajama shorts. They're very casual. They're like a linen short. With an elastic waistband, by the way. Selling feature, elastic waistband. So they're very comfortable. And they're not black. And everyone who walked in the door was like, number one, oh my gosh, those are not black. And number two, too. Your legs are out. I never see your legs. And I was like, oh yeah, I don't break these white legs out for nothing.
Does that mean you're going to model them for the show notes?
No, probably not. Maybe John will convince me, but I'll most likely just put the pictures of the items in a mood board and you can see what I got.
You can see them on someone else's legs.
But there are some amazing sales, so check it out. I feel like I got maybe 6 pieces. It is my summer capsule wardrobe. Like, it is literally what I'm going to wear this summer. And every picture you'll see me in these items.
Yeah, I guess you'll see them eventually.
You'll see them all the time because I only wear the same 5 things. They're just my new 5 things. And I retired the faded, the ripped, and the broken zippered things that were in the closet.
R.I.P. Well, and what I'm digging this week is another podcast. It's actually a podcast for kids, but not just for kids, because Sherry and I happily listen to it with the kids in the car. I guess we don't listen to it on our own. That would be a little strange.
Yeah, it would be weird.
It's a podcast called Story Pirates, and the short version of what it is they take story submissions from children, so elementary school age children, even like preschoolers, I guess, as well. And this cast of actors and singers turns them into short sketches and songs. And so it's really goofy and silly, and the kids love it. Like, they request it now in the car. But as an adult, like, there's enough like funny stuff and like kind of inside jokes, kind of like in a Pixar movie, how there's like little nods to adults throughout.
They're just words kids don't know, and they're not like PG-13. They're just like, there's one about unicorns.
I didn't know this word.
And they're like whispering in the back of their mind. They're like, oh, what'd you do with your mane? I really like your hair. And she's like, oh, it's balayage. And like, I laughed out loud because balayage is this like fancy hair dyeing technique that children would never know what that is.
Husbands would never know what it was. I did not get this joke.
But there's also very catchy songs in it.
Yeah, I mean, the songs are actually pretty good. Like, there's one song per episode, and they do a good job of turning these kids' like stories. They're not literally taking the stories word for word all the time. They're sort of using them as a launch point for it. And like, yeah, the kids like actually sing the songs afterwards. So they're about a half hour long. They're great for car trips. I also like it because since both of our kids are into making their own stories, it's kind of encouraged them more to think about them, because they think like, oh, maybe one day I could send mine in and it might become this, you know, cool thing on a podcast.
Yeah, they're like brainstorming at this point what their Story Pirates like breakout success is going to be.
Right. I'm glad we have already instilled in our children that being on a podcast is like, you've made it. So again, it's called Story Pirates. I'll put a link in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast, or you can find it wherever you're probably listening to this podcast.
Listeners first, then Story Pirates.
Yes, even though it's ours has fewer cool songs. Although we did make up that pretty cool jingle earlier.
Bing bong.
Ding dong.
Ding.
No, I said ding dong. You said something else.
I said nanner 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 doom doom doom.
We'll work on it.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And hey, I've got another idea for your game night. You should play a game I call Recommend a Podcast. And when it's your turn, you can recommend ours. It's a lot of fun, I promise. And you can even say, it's where I got the idea for this super weird game we're playing.
Totally win-win.
Yes, exactly.
And you know I love when you guys tell us what you do while you're listening. Like Katie, who told us a harrowing tale of blowing out her ACL in her bathroom, dragging herself to the bedroom and playing our podcast to keep herself calm while she waited for her husband to get home to help.
I like that we're calming.
I know, it's my soothing yet shrill voice.
Perfect.
Don't forget to check out younghouselove.com/podcast for the bonus links, info, and photos from this episode, like those awesome chairs I scored on Facebook Marketplace.
And pictures of Sherry modeling her new clothes.
Nope, I'm going to link to them though.
Later.
Bye. Have you ever in your life said, will you hand me some facial tissue?
No, I don't. I say, will you hand me the bath tissue?
No. You say, give me the toilet paper in our house because we're classy.
I say, honey, I got a booger.
No, I do not.
Honey, can you help me with this?
Editing. We're going to need some editing on this.